Welcome back to Voices of Change. Joining us today is Tammy Pfeiffer, the Vice President of External Affairs and Chief of Staff for UNITE.
So it's great to have you here today. We're thrilled and love the work that you are leading along with Tim Shriver and others over at UNITE. And so I just want to get started and ask you to tell us a little bit about yourself and to tell us a little bit about the work that you're involved in with UNITE.
Stacey, it's great to be with you on this program and really excited about the work we're doing. I am an educator. My background is in special education. I did a little bit of work in early intervention with students, young children with visual impairments, and eventually taught at Utah State University for 10 years as a clinical instructor, supervising student teachers, doing some assistive technology courses that I taught, some early intervention courses. And my time at Utah State led in a way to an appointment by the governor of Utah, Governor Gary Herbert, to be on the State Board of Education. And after 4 years on the state board, he appointed me to be his education policy advisor. And so I spent 7 years, the last 7 years of his administration from 2014 through 2020, as the education policy advisor for the state of Utah, which was a great experience. I spent time with Governor Herbert, and we had a little reunion last night and colleagues from those last 7 years in his office, and a really great, great experience for me looking at state education policies and how it affects all of the different organizations and stakeholders that are so important to our work.
I just love this about you, Tammy, and I love that we have a moment with you to really begin to talk to listeners about education policy. I think one of the issues in the country right now, and one of my personal passions, is that educators are not in the national dialogue enough to explain what is going on. And my personal experience of 25 years in this work and not being an educator, I come out of media, is that people really don't understand the substance and the depth at which policy is developed, how many people in the education world, particularly at your level, have dedicated their lives to this work. And I believe that there really is an opportunity right now for educators to come together and step up and be what I call a reasonable, credible voice in the national dialogue of what's going on around, you know, social issues in this country. I'd love to get your feedback on that.
So I love that we're leading with this, because one of the top priorities during those 7 years I had with the governor was to get teacher voices in the mix of our policy making. I served as during my time on at Utah State University, I also served as a locally elected official. So I spent 8 years on a municipal, a city council. And so I get the inclination of elected officials to respond. Your constituents call you, you respond. And at the city level, you know, we had everything from water issues, road, the library, the fire services, police. So you respond in a lot of ways. When you get to the state level, you have legislators who are elected to respond. And when constituents call them and say, I don't like what's happening in my son's third grade class, then they respond, or they want to respond. And this is where I think my experience as an elected official, but then also as an educator, would jump in, and I'd say, I'm glad you want to respond. Let me explain what's really happening. Or let's go to the boots on the ground. Let's pull that teacher in. Let me tell you how funding actually works at the local level. And a lot of the problems I think that we face with the disconnect in at that state level policymaking is that legislators simply don't understand what's happening at the level that our teachers and superintendents or principals understand. And they want to do their job and respond. And so the teacher's voice has never been more important in education policy making. And we went after that in a really big way with Governor Herbert and our administration to bring teachers into the mix, to bring them at the table with the governor, to bring them into legislative committee hearings and have them not in a confrontational way, but to say, hey, thank you for wanting to respond. Let me tell you what that looks like in my classroom. Let me tell you what's already happening. And Stacey, if I might, I know you've probably experienced this too. One of the things I always struggled with was policymakers would read about something happening, some isolated incidents in New York City or in Louisiana, and all of a sudden that became the number one problem in Utah. And it's like, whoa, wait. Not only is it not the number one problem in Utah, it's not the number one problem anywhere. This is an isolated incident that's happened. But again, and I'm giving credit really to elected officials who want to respond, but it's like, slow down a little bit. Let's see, is this really a problem? And so we spent a lot of time trying to put out those fires that really didn't exist.
Well, and Tammy, I just think this, I mean, we could spend a 3-hour series on this.
Right.
And I love this because, you know, our tagline is the power of media and the promise of education help communities reach their highest good. And so the idea is to bring media and education together where they are talking to one another, the sectors. And for media, I'm going to call my media colleagues out a little bit on this. And I think media executives are trying as well, but
right.
Because of what the drivers are, same thing as an educational, mm-hmm. An elected official wanting to respond, media needs to respond when they hear about these sort of isolated incidents. And what we're trying to do is get media literacy into the hands of kids and parents, mm-hmm. and get, you know, educational practices and policies, get that to the general population, because this is the exact problem. It's a one-off. You know, I used to always say early on in our company, there are no focus groups of one. It's not just we saw this happen, and that mm-hmm. now speaks to everything that's happening across the country, because as you and I know, it absolutely does not, you know,
right.
And often the public, because we're getting our information in such quick bites, mm-hmm. such shallow formats, and there's not a way to really take the time and understand everything at the deeper levels, is getting information and making assumptions about that information because it's going out in mass media and thinking that's going on in schools. And the reality is that most often it's not. And I think that's why educators in the national dialogue that can actually be counted on as a trusted voice to give some perspective is they're not celebrities. Okay, that's good. You know, they're deep in the work, right? And so we need to be hearing from them and giving them platforms and listening to them. And I know that I'm going to lead you into Unite now and some of the work that you're doing, because I know that, you know, I think that we align with Unite in the sense that there is a path forward, but it in a highly divisive debate about what's going on in schools and what's going on in general in the country. But that path forward is not an old path. It's a new path,
right,
that opens up language and ways to look at things and invites inclusion of all points of view and allows us to actually figure out what we agree on and what we can move forward versus what divides us.
Exactly.
And so it's one of the reasons that, you know, I've just had great respect for the work of Unite and for people that are thoughtful and substantive, because I believe, honestly, and I'm sure you see this too, Tammy, in your work, 80% of the country lives in that space. Mm-hmm. 80% of the country wants that solution. Right? We just have to be able to move that forward. So I want to talk today a lot about the Unite work and what's going on with the Dignity Index and some of the other projects that y'all are involved in, and make sure that people are aware of some deeper information Mm-hmm. That's the beauty of a podcast and the different formats in media, you know, to get into some deeper information about what you're really trying to achieve and why people should be paying special attention to this.
Well, and I like the way you frame that with, you know, bringing diverse voices together. Early on, we would get a little bit of pushback from people saying, unite, you just want everyone to be the same. You want us just to agree with those guys and push our issues down so that we're just all getting along and being nice. And we're going, that's not what we mean by unite. What we mean is you bring all of those voices to the table, that you bring the diversity, because as a policymaker, and I remember this from my days, even on a city council, is I can't make good decisions unless I hear all of the different perspectives and the points of view. And so at Unite, we believe that what we want to unite around is this principle that everyone deserves to be heard and everyone deserves to be treated with dignity. That's what we want. That's what we want to unite around. And to do so, we've got to bring everyone in. We want to bring those voices in. We want them to have a seat at the table. And we want to understand the different lived experiences of different groups so that we can help move the country forward in better ways.
And I think that's critical, because I think the issue here is for people to understand complexity and for people to understand the substance and the depth at which people are working on these issues and spending their time. And Patrick Jean-Pierre, who's a dear friend and who's in the Defining Us documentary, one of the things he says is that you have to have representation from all types of people at the table. Right. And that's not just racial representation or, you know, issues of sexuality. It's diverse experiences. It's people that are coming in from different genres, you know, from different levels of experience, you know, and really hearing what those people have to say. And that's what we try to do. And I know that's what you're trying to do. And what I find
exactly
is once you listen to all of them, it's very interesting because the similarities come through. Right? They may be, and there's truth everywhere. There's truth that exists in a variety mm-hmm. of different pockets and places, despite, you know, how it's labeled. And so y'all have done something that has been amazing, I think, and it really gives great language to what we're trying to do in the country through the Dignity Index. And so I'd like you to explain a little bit about the Dignity Index, what it is about, what it's for, and how it's being received, because I think it's a vehicle for consumers, it's a vehicle for educators, it's a vehicle for lifelong learning, and that word dignity is so crucial. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. And I just love this idea of bringing people together and the diverse voices, you know, back to education for a minute. Utah we're really a rural state. We've got a couple of not even metropolitan areas, but, you know, urban areas. But the different lived experiences of people in rural parts of our state, in rural education settings, they're so different from Salt Lake City and the Capitol, and when you go in to legislate policy, not realizing how this really impacts students who live in a school with 132 students. So again, back to your point with diversity,
I think. Stop you right there, Tammy, because I want to point that out. You know, I just want the listening audience to try to pause when they hear something. I mean, if we would all just pause for a minute, you know, less than 60 seconds,
yeah,
and think about, you know, there are kids out there that are living in rural areas that are in schools of 132 students.
Yeah,
I've been on a reservation in Nevada where the isolation mm-hmm. is incredible. And the only thing they really have is this school building in a very tiny community, but they've got cell phones. That's a totally different experience than when I hear about something that's happening in New York City public schools or And it's we just have to remind ourselves that mm-hmm. there's this big, broad world out there, and we might be being encouraged to make an assumption about something mm-hmm. that is not the norm.
And think of education policies that say, you know, if we could just assign that school a letter grade, they'd get better. That school on the reservation, where the school is the only building on the reservation with running water and electricity, which has been the case in Utah. We've had that scenario. So the policy that says all they need is, you know, if we could grade them, and that would, they would see how terrible they are or how good they are, and that would improve education policy or the educational practices. It's like, no, come and see, you know, come out and see what is happening in these areas.
I think, Tammy, that's the critical thing. I always say to people when somebody approaches me and asks me about, you know, I always say, when was the last time you were in a school?
Yes.
And if you are a local legislator, if you are somebody in media, if you're writing a column, if you mm-hmm. are, if you have a platform and a microphone that gives you access to influence the masses, yeah. I am begging you to go spend a couple of days touring schools in just in your area.
Yeah.
Walk the hallways, right? Talk to a couple of teachers before we start making assumptions about what's really impacting the youth of this country and their families.
And circling back to this teacher involvement, I used to tell teachers, we would have, you know, workshops, and they would come up to the Capitol, and I would say, find out who your legislator is, and they need to have your cell phone. They need to have you on speed dial, and you need to have their cell phone. And every legislator should be able at a moment's notice to say, well, my superintendent that I represent says this because I just texted him, and that's not the case in this school. You know, there just needs to be that direct connection. And I realize even saying that and promoting that, it's one more thing for teachers to do, right, which I really hesitate doing. My daughter's a special education teacher, but there's ways to do that. There's ways for schools to, you know, to nominate one of their teachers to be their school's representative in this area, and have them be a legislative liaison. Whether that's even maybe interacting with the school board or being the representative for the school board or for the state legislature or for your federal delegation. But I just can't overemphasize the importance of getting policymakers into schools, onto reservations, into rural parts of your state, into high density. We've got a school district here in Salt Lake City that has a very, very high density of refugees. Refugee education is very different.
Right. And
it's a beautiful thing, but it's got its own set of constraints that we really need to work around.
And I think that's exactly right. And we're not going to go backward, right? America is what it was always meant to be. It is this wonderful land of, you know, people that come from a variety of backgrounds and cultures and complexities, and it's just so critical now that as the world evolves, and in this, I believe we're breaking open into greater times and transformative times in the future, as we do that, that we find vehicles that allow us to navigate that differently and in a positive way. And so let's talk a little bit about the Dignity Index, what you guys have going on with that, because I'm excited about it and fascinated about it and want to know more.
So the Dignity Index is a project that actually had its roots. We've been working on this for, well, over 2 years, but we had started out thinking that we would do a nonprofit news service and that we would look at positive examples happening across the country of people actually coming together, crossing divides to solve our most intractable problems. Let's find those bright spots. Let's report on them. Let's talk to those people and see how they do it so we can use that, you know, in my special ed language as a model. Let's find it. Let's put it up as a model and then teach people maybe how to do that in other situations, generalize that behavior. And as we started to build a prototype of a website for our Unite News, we thought, well, let's put up this index that maybe shows, you know, a barometer of what's happening on through this and look at it through the lens of dignity, how people are treating each other. And as we started to build this website and show it to, you know, some potential funders, they said, you know, the news thing is okay. There's a lot of independent news organizations, but tell me about this index. What do you mean? What are you looking at here? What are you trying to measure? So we started to pay a little more attention to the index and left Unite News behind and really have focused then on developing an index, which is a way to measure the language we use when we are in disagreement with someone, when we have different ideas or different philosophies, and we come together in a situation that could otherwise be contentious or could be contentious. I shouldn't say otherwise, that is often contentious. What is the language we use and how do we treat that other person? Do we treat them with contempt, which has become so prevalent in the country today? Or do we treat them in a way that allows us to prevent violence and to solve problems and to ease the divisions in our country? So we thought, well, we can't change something that we can't measure. Again, back to my special ed background, if there were a behavior problem or even an academic issue we want to change, I've got to take baseline data, got to figure out where that student is. And then I've got to have an intervention and then I've got to measure the progress on you know, whatever that issue might be with the student. So the same thing with the language that we use. And we came up with a scale. It's a 1 to 8 scale. We started at a 1 to 10. We put language. My colleague Tom Rochard is the main architect of the Dignity Index, and he studied stage theory at Harvard. And so as he built this scale, we wanted it to be easily applicable and to have people say, be able to say, oh, I see what you mean by contempt. That means name calling. That means I'm going to assume negative intent on your part, or I'm going to pretty much think that you're ruining the country. That's a contemptuous statement. But what does the opposite look like? If we know the contempt's a problem, what is the solution to that problem? And we spent a lot of time in the work of Dr. Donna Hicks, who is an international conflict resolution specialist. She did work all across the world in war-torn countries. She worked in Northern Ireland with Bishop Desmond Tutu and in South Africa. And she would bring parties together who hated each other, who were killing each other. And in her book, Dignity, she writes about this idea of offering a little bit of dignity to someone and what that does to change the conversation, to change the dynamics, to change the power struggle. When you see even a small amount of yourself in someone else and you start to offer them dignity, she said that would often change the conversation. She mentions that the driving force for her book, Dignity, was a conversation she had with Bishop Tutu, who asked her to write a book about her experience and what she'd learned in these conflict resolution situations. And she said, it's dignity. That's the key. And so she wrote a book called Dignity, and Bishop Tutu wrote the foreword to that book. She followed up with a book called Leading with Dignity, which actually I use when I speak to educators about leading with dignity and how we treat not just our students, but the parents of our students and the community members and our colleagues. Can I dive a little bit more into the scale? Or
yeah, I would love for you to, I want to mention again that there will be podcast notes with this podcast and a podcast companion guide that we do, because we're very big on the substantive information coming out. And I want to tell everybody that, you know, the book Dignity will be listed in those podcast notes and Leading with Dignity. And yes, please, because I'm fascinated by this, because I think it's spot on. I mean, it's very similar, you know, again, language matters, right? And, you know, the idea of us, that's our whole mission, is how do we see ourselves and others to help us better understand ourselves and others? And we do that, obviously, through film and through communications techniques for both, you know, media and education. But I love that. And so I want to hear, take us through the Dignity Index, okay, if you will. Okay.
I will. And let me mention too, so the Dignity and Donna's books on dignity are part of the companion work that we did on contempt. And the book that we highly recommend on contempt is a book by Arthur Brooks called Love Your Enemies. And he talks about what's happening in our country. This came out, I believe, in early 2020, maybe late 2019, when we were beginning this work. And we actually saw the contempt side first. It's like, this makes so much sense. Our problems aren't caused by the fact that I disagree with you on education policy, or that I disagree with you on, you know, the whatever it might be happening at the federal level with immigration, right? Or the economy. The problem is that I have contempt for you because I disagree with you.
Right.
And it's the contempt that's causing the problems, not our disagreement on policy issues. So if contempt causes the problems, we believe that dignity is the solution to those problems. So here's our scale. The scale goes from 1 to 8. And our tagline is, we believe that it will ease divisions, that it will prevent violence, and it will help us solve problems. So starting at the bottom of the scale, a 1 is the lowest you can get on the scale. This is full contempt for the other side. And if you go to our website, dignityindex.us, we have a lot of material on the index, but this, I'm going to give you the quick version today. So this is the thought process that we have. This is our mindset when we're at a 1. They're not even human. Those people are not even human. It's our moral duty to destroy them before they destroy us. This is the genocide level. This is what happens in Rwanda. And this is the Holocaust. This is what's happening and has happened over centuries across the world. It's like, they're evil. I need to destroy them or they're going to destroy me. A 2 is, those people are evil and they're going to ruin our country if we let them. It's us or them. You're not quite at the point where you're calling for, explicitly calling for violence, but you're implicitly calling for violence. And think about it, Stacey. Think about the language that you hear in the country, political language, or that you see in fundraising emails. I opened a fundraising email the other day that literally said, those people are evil and they're going to ruin our country if we let them.
But what we often see, I always say when somebody says they, I say, you know, give me a face. Of they. Who is that? Is that one person? Yeah. Is it two people? Who are the, quote, intellectual elite of the country? Right. Who are the far right? You know, all the ways that we generalize people, and we fail to see them as human beings and as complicated, complex human beings that have a wide variety of thoughts and understandings and gifts and talents and all those things. And we want to group them together, I believe, because it makes us feel safe and allows us to be arm's length from them and them, whoever that is, right?
Right.
Whatever triggers my fears, correct?
And I think our brains have been wired for so long to be black and white. Right. Self-preservation. You know, you're the enemy. You've threatened me, or your ideas have threatened my ideas. And so it's just, it's almost this self-soothing self-preservation where if I can just put you in a box, you know, I can breathe easier because now I know it's not me. I know I don't need to change. It's not that I was wrong. It's those people. And I have to tell you, there's a great line that Tim Shriver used. He gave a commencement address the other night at the University of Utah. And he said, it's never those people. Right. When we say those people are ruining everything and it's those people, it's their fault. He said, it's never those people. We are all those people. It's us.
I mean, totally with that, because even in our own organization, if an employee or somebody calls me and says, well, you know, there's a lot of people upset, and I'll say, huh, who would that be?
Who are those? Exactly.
Is that one person that's yelling the loudest, or are there 10? And are they upset about the same things? I mean, if we can just stop ourselves, you know, and just pause and really start to believe, you know, Paul Forbes, who's a leading voice in education on implicit bias and does work around the country in that area and works very closely with us and is one of the leads in the Defining Us documentary, you know, the power of the pause to just stop yourself for a minute and say, let me just think about this another way. But it's very difficult in a society that is delivering information so quickly.
Right.
We're all so busy and we're so distracted.
Yeah.
It's easier to believe and buy in to our emotional reaction than it is to question it.
Right.
And I think that's true for all of us.
Right.
All of
right.
us, right.
So we've gone from they're evil and need to be destroyed to they're right. evil. They're ruining our country. Three is we're the good people and they're the bad people.
Right.
It's us versus them. I'm not going to say that they're ruining the country and we need to stop them, but we're the good people and they're the bad people. And I have to tell you, hopefully, I mean, it's a warning, but it's also, I think, something that's so attractive about this scale is once you hear the language associated with each step on the scale, you start to see that that's sometimes what you say, or that's sometimes what you think. You start to see language in either in your head or coming out of your mouth that you didn't intend to come out, and that you now realize that I didn't. And often I'll think I'm a nice person. I get along with people. I don't call people out. Even as an elected official, I never was that person setting things on fire in a meeting, you know, calling people hateful things. But in my mind, you know, when you approach a problem or situation, there are times when I've said to myself, we are the good people and they're the bad people.
Yeah.
It's us versus them. I've got to rally the troops because I have to defeat this person. So that's a three. When I start to say that, I'm at a three and I'm just two steps away from, you know, what has caused so much heartache and devastation in our country and in our world. So that's a three. At a four, this is like you're getting close to the dignity side, but you're still on the contempt side. One through four is the contempt side. A four, you're saying to yourself, we're better than those people. I just don't trust them. I'm better than they are. And this is such a human tendency.
We
I'm
love better that than you. Spot. That
right?
Human beings love that spot. That's where right. we like to live. Even
right,
though
right.
they're trying to do well, I'm just a little bit smarter, right. more special.
Yeah, than you are.
Yeah, right.
Because I'm educated in this area right, and I know
exactly.
this. I've had this life experience. So, yeah. so I'm better than you, which
and
means
you
yeah. yeah, which means and think about that. So think about if you're an elected official.
Yeah.
And your internal dialogue is a four, I'm better than you, I don't trust you, or it's a three, I'm the good person, you're the bad person. And think if you're an elected official and that's your mindset, how are you going to come to the table and solve problems with someone? How are you going to reach across the aisle and develop a solution that may require compromise? How are you going to do that if in your mind, you're saying to yourself, actually, I'm the good person, you're the bad person. This is where I think there's been such a shutdown in our national politics and often in our state politics, because you can't solve problems if you look at other people as the problem or less than you.
And I want to spend a little bit of time at three and four, just for a minute, Tammy, and dig into that a little bit deeper, because I think when I said 80% of the country wants solutions, I think this is where that 80% most likely gets stuck. And I know I get stuck there. And so it's so ingrained in us in America and how we roll sort of as a society to, you know, somebody said to me one time, and this is, you know, It's not that you don't call out evil when there's evil or call out bad when there's bad. That's not
correct.
What we're saying here. I want to be really clear about
correct.
That.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think that, you know, there are universal truths for any individual and society. And we mm-hmm. all, if we are quiet with ourselves for a moment, know what those are. Most of us do, right? And so atrocities are not something to say, well, you know, everybody's got their point of view. That's not what we're talking about.
Correct.
Here. Correct.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We are talking about humanity and human dignity. That said, someone once said to me, and I'll use the language three and four, although that's not what they said, but if you're at a three or four, you're in danger zone. You are in danger zone, and you have to, you sort of like Danger Will Robinson, for those of who you
mm-hmm,
yeah. remember.
I totally get the reference.
The Lost in Space, you know, Danger
right.
Robinson. Because you are very, very close to making, and probably are, making assumptions about complexities and issues and people and impact that you have no information on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of my favorite things is arrogance plus ignorance is the worst possible situation that you can be in when you're trying to navigate difficult issues. If I'm A, don't have the information, ignorant on some in some areas, and I'm a little arrogant about it because I think that I just get it. Mm-hmm. And I get it as a human being more than other people do. I'm in a real problem area. And I think 3 and 4 on that dignity, well, I think you're saying, and so expand on this, but at that point I have an opportunity to go either way. Mm-hmm. I can either get up into this higher level, and I can disintegrate down to a 1 and 2, and it's a turning point. It's a critical inflection point. And all of us need to be understanding of that and where we're headed in that inflection point in our lives.
Mm-hmm. And how we accept
that things are going on.
Right. And I like to think about it. I like to just, my goal when I wake up in the morning or when I see something in the news that really upsets me, my goal is to try and live at a 5 and not drop down into the 4. Let me just put a face on this for you. So I've had, 12 years as an elected official, 7 years in an administration, a Republican administration, a very conservative state. I see the politics a lot. I have 5 adult children, and they associate with 5 political parties. So I'm a Republican. I consider myself a moderate Republican, moderate to conservative Republican. And let me go through my children with you in birth order. I have a Republican. The next one is an independent. The next one's a Democrat. The next one's a Democratic Socialist. And the last one's a Libertarian.
Wow.
So when I'm in conversations and someone says, those Democrats are evil and they're ruining the country, you are talking about my son or my daughter. When they say those Republicans are crazy, they are XYZ, it's like, you're talking about my child. You're talking about me. You're talking about my spouse. But when you start to put families, put their faces here. And I've made presentations before to, groups of Republicans, and I will have people come up to me afterwards and say, kind of in a hushed tone, my son's a Democrat too. As though, we don't feel safe to talk about this, right? Well, because it has become so polarized. But when people say the Democrats are evil or the Republicans are evil and they're ruining the country, you're talking about my kids. And I'm going to do something. Stop it. You've got to stop it. Because I know, because now all of a sudden they are real people and they are not their party. They are beautiful, wonderful child of God who happens to think differently than I do on political matters.
And I love this, Tammy, because I can relate. I mean, I live in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm in the South. I have a wide mix of people in my life. I have my own family, 2 adult children, and an extended family that lives in small southern towns around the South, but also an extended family that lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico, right? And so I have this wide variety of folks, and it's so interesting because I actually believe that tension of opposites and constructive conflict and constructive conversation moves the ball forward.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that you get anywhere without that, without being willing to be uncomfortable and have constructive conversations. But what we have learned in our own family, and particularly in our nuclear family, because we all have variety of, it's a spectrum, right? Like I tend to lean, interestingly with us, I lean a lot more liberal than, what would be considered liberal mm-hmm. on some issues. I tend to lean a little bit more conservative on other issues. I mean, it's a mix. And what we found is that when we can stop and actually hear each other because we're not going at each other, mm-hmm. we all walk away and go, well, there's some truth to that. Well, mm-hmm. I don't agree with that article that he just sent to the family, but, I see 3 things in it that make some sense to me. You can get into the details and the layers and the nuances, but you have to know people. And where what is so important, I think, is what you just said. Same thing with my children is, you know, when you love somebody and when you really, really are close to them and you can look at it first from that position, right? You're so much more willing to accept their different point of view because you know them differently. I mean, they're not just their politics. They are not just, you know, what they intellectually believe. They're all these things, right? And we all should have the freedom to speak those truths in a kind and compassionate way. And I mean, everybody should have the freedom, you know, that's why, you know, we can get into all the free speech stuff. But my point is that I think it's a great point. I mean, I love that you're a fam. Of course, what I would say to you, you got five kids. Of course, they're going to be different, right? Of course, yeah. They're going to have different attitudes and beliefs, right? Of course, I mean, my husband and I do this, and I'm for the audience who can't see, you know, we butt up against each other and have these conversations, but wow, it makes that, and our children, and it makes that relationship, what I find that's so amazing is how much deeper that relationship is if you're willing to go there with respect and honesty and kindness. Boy, you get to know somebody at a whole different level, and it is a beautiful thing. Versus just staying on the surface and being afraid to talk about things.
Yeah, there was a quote in a recent speech here in Salt Lake City by a religious leader, and he said, "Unity doesn't require sameness, but it does require harmony." And my husband and I sing together. All of my children sing, and we've sung for years together, and we all. You know, we sing four-part harmony. Sometimes we add a fifth. And I sang with the Tabernacle Choir for 7 years. And this harmony, this idea of having the different voices, I mean, and there's nothing I enjoy more than singing with our children together. And think of how boring it would be if we all sang in unison, that's all we ever did. We sang in unison.
And I love that. That is a perfect example of how the depth occurs when there's different harmony, you know, in the music, you know, and if people can just remember that and just be willing to go there. So let's go to 5, 6, 7.
Let's go 5, 6, and 7, 8. So 1 through 4 are the contempt side. And often, again, the four, you nailed the four. That's kind of this point at which we can make a decision to go up or we can go further down. So 5 is the companion to that. 5 is when you are now in the beginning of the dignity side. And your mindset in 5 is the other side has a right to be here and a right to be heard. It's their country too. So it's kind of like a neutral. It's like it's neutral, but you are on the dignity side. It's like everyone has a right to be here. Right. I'm not really curious about anything yet, but they have a right to be here. I'm not going to treat someone with contempt.
Right. Love
6,
that.
Yeah. When you get up to 6, then that's when you're looking for areas that you might agree on with someone else. And the mindset is we always talk to the other side, searching for the values and interests we share. So I'm going to find something that I have in common with you. You know, we both have adult children. You know, we're both in education. I'm going to try and find those things we share so that we can build on that and build a relationship based on that thing we agree on or the values we share. 7, that's a 6, and 7 takes that a little bit further. And now I'm looking not just for those things we agree on or that we share, but I want to find out what do we not have in common? What do we disagree on? Because I want to find out why we disagree. I want to find what led to your thought on or your position on this particular matter. Why do you think that way? And it's no longer, I'm going to put that to the side because let's just focus on the things we agree on. But let's start focusing on the things we disagree on, and I want to learn more. The mindset we have here is we fully engage with the other side, discussing even the values and interests we don't share, so we know where they're coming from.
So, I think this is critical before we get to 8, but this is critical from this idea of understanding others. You know, it's more than, okay, now we can kind of coexist peacefully.
Right. Five is coexisting peacefully.
Right.
6 is being a little bit more than that. Maybe having the friendly neighbor, right? That, yeah, we've got some things in common. Yeah.
I think that this this coexisting, this we'll just stay shallow and on the surface, and we'll all just stay in our own communities. You know, I see that in day-to-day life, you know, okay, this doesn't really impact me, and I'm not going to challenge you on what you don't believe. I'm not even going to hear what differences you have, because you're going to stay over there and I'm going to stay over here. And in a complex society that needs to integrate and work together, that doesn't really work all that well. It keeps us sort of in, you know, just a status quo, slow motion. Maybe it, you know, gets us to where we're not all fighting, but it really doesn't take us to the next level. And so I think this is where people, I think, at 7 really start to have a difficult time, because it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable. And you have to have a little bit of a skill level and to have thought about it to navigate it successfully. Because you have to meet people where they are, and not everybody's going to be at the same spot that you're in. And there has to be room for that in these 7 and 8 type conversations. So,
right. Yeah. And back to one of your previous points, it's like, this is where your identity and your ideas and your surety starts to get challenged, right? Like, maybe what if I'm wrong on this issue? And when you get into this really deep discussion on a 7 level, sometimes at a 6, but on a 7 level, you have to be willing, you're very vulnerable. And you have to be willing to be vulnerable and be willing to say, what if I'm wrong on this?
What if I'm
That's
wrong?
Hard.
I have to tell you, I have to give now a face on this. This happened to me the other day. So I was listening to a podcast with a religious leader that somebody had sent me, who is more conservative on certain issues than I am. This guy was incredibly well-researched, is an expert on some particular social justice issues and on, you know, particular perspectives from a religious standpoint. And I was listening to the podcast, and there were a lot of things that he was saying that I completely agree with. As a matter of fact, a lot of the things he was saying, even though he's much more conservative on key issues than I am, or what would be defined as more conservative. And there was something happening with me that was irritating me.
I know exactly what you're saying.
I mean, I'm like listening and I'm like, I do not want to hear this. It's ticking me off. I want to turn the podcast off. And what's really interesting about it is I couldn't really name it, because it was not exactly, you know, and it wasn't something that I could say, there it is, I disagree with that. But there was something in what he was saying that was challenging me. And what I realized was that I didn't want to go there. I didn't want to open my mind enough to think that maybe my assumptions were, there was a different point of view that I needed to hear. It was easier for me to say, nope, my point of view is right.
Yeah.
You're now irritating me. I can't really put my finger on it. I'm going to shut this off and I'm going to go read what I'm used to reading. I'm going to go find all the people that I don't feel irritated with. Right. Do you know what I mean? And that don't challenge me. And I'm going to live there.
Yeah.
It was a fascinating experience. It really bothered me for a while.
Well, and you've expressed what I think what Tom Rosher, again, the main architect of the scale of our team, he says that the higher you get on the scale, you know, the 6 and the 7 and the 8, the more that these other qualities show up, the humility, right? The curiosity, the vulnerability. When you're at a 7, those feelings also arise. And so you are more curious and you tend to be, you can learn to be, it's hard, but your humility all of a sudden is like, wow, maybe I was wrong on this.
Yes.
And maybe your vulnerability.
Hear something a little different. Maybe I need to relate to this in a different way. Maybe I need, and this is the thing I think that got to me as I thought about it. Maybe I need to be comfortable with the fact that I don't have all the answers. That I can actually be curious, say I'm not certain about key issues that are complex and difficult to navigate,
right?
And live with that for a minute,
Right.
I mean,
you're open and you're vulnerable. And, you know, as Tom has visited with me, those are connected to dignity. As dignity rises, so does humility and curiosity and vulnerability and this willingness to say, I might be wrong. Tell me more. Let me hear even more from you, because I think I might be shifting on that. And think about it too, before I go to an eight, think about if our elected officials lived or governed at a 6 or a 7.
Right.
I'm not even saying if you govern at a 7 or an 8, which would be fantastic. Yeah, right. But if you governed at a 6 or a 7, where you are reaching across the aisle, I'm a Republican, I'm going to go find that Democratic socialist that I completely disagree with, and I'm going to find out why they think that. What are your lived experiences? And is there a way for us to accomplish, both of us accomplish, what we want to accomplish by learning more about each other without being a Republican solution or a Democrat solution? What is a better solution? Let's just solve problems.
And I just love that, because I think that, you know, if we can do that, and that vulnerability, and my personal experience, Tammy, is the more that I will get to know people who have a different lived experience than mine, the more humility and vulnerability rises to the top. It's not like, oh, I'm so humble and vulnerable. It's not something
it just happens.
It's something that kind of happens to you as you reach across the aisle, more than you set out to say, I'm one of these people, right? There's a problem in that as well. It's more of an openness to say, I really want to understand, and that curiosity. And once you engage that way, and the work has helped us all do that, right? Because in schools and with, you know, you're dealing with all kinds of folks, right? And you're getting to know them. And once you're willing to do that, it happens to you, because again, you're dealing with individual people. And, you know, kudos to Tim Schreiber, you know, those and they doesn't exist anymore. It's like a phantom group of people, right? Yeah. I don't have a those in my life. You know, I was thinking about it the other day, of all the people we interact with and know. And I, like I said, I live in a, you know, a conservative community in the South. Maybe 3 people live exactly like I do. Do you see? I mean,
exactly.
More than that. But my point is that we all have different pockets. We all have different people that we deal with in all walks of life. Step back and just try to broaden that horizon, you know, by the power of 1 or 2, and the ripple effect starts to happen for you. And that vulnerability comes, because it has to.
Well, and let me flip something that you just said. Let me just flip it back and have you look at it another way. When we get to know people deeply, you know, and we change, our feelings towards them change, and our desire to work with them changes when we get to know them deeply. Let me just flip that. And I know you've had this experience. How do you feel when someone gets to know you deeply?
Oh, absolutely.
When someone that you disagree with, and now you've become friends, and you know, like, they've taken the time. And I've met people in my life that are just so good at coming in and getting to know me deeply. And it changes the way I want to interact with them. I want to help you solve problems, because you know me and you wanted to know me. Right. And that changes the dynamic so much.
And it puts you just in relationship with them, which is really that's who you want in your life. You know, you and I are about the same age, you know, we've grown up in the same generation. And the reality is that as you get older in life, you only want those relationships in your life. You know, the shallow, the all the things that you're carrying the flag for with people that you don't know, you know, it really is about that deeper relationship. And it's just, it's a much more meaningful and purposeful way to walk through the world that we're in. But you have to, you know, I think it's something that happens to you as you are willing to go deeper with folks, right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
But anyway, let's get to eight. Right, excited. Okay.
and I'm gonna say, even though I'm using political examples because we piloted this on political speech, put in, you know, your listeners can put in their mind the school board and the parents and teachers. Right. I mean, any of these dynamics where there's conflict, instead of being high conflict, as Amanda Ripley writes, we should look for healthy conflict. So let's get up to an eight. So an eight is like, this is the, we have little cards that you can find on our website that will take you up through each of these mindsets. But an eight, the mindset is really each one of us is born with inherent worth. So we treat everyone with dignity, no matter what. This is the Bishop Tutu level. There's a great quote that we have that I can send you for your listeners, where Bishop Tutu, he just says, I see myself in everyone. He said, I can look at the, you know, that people that others would consider, and he doesn't use this language, but that others would consider monsters, child soldiers who have committed the worst atrocities. And I can look at them and see that, you know, if I'd had the same experiences, in fact, the language a lot of us use is there, but for the grace of God, go I. And I can see, I can see part of myself, the humanity, I can see it in them. I can see myself in them. And that's where we often, the kind of the shortcut phrase that we use is that in contempt, we see ourselves above others. In dignity, we see ourselves in others.
Tammy, that's the key.
Yeah.
And that's what I love. And what I love about the Dignity Index, which is why I wanted to, is that you define all that by stage until, because one of our key things is that the power of storytelling. I mean, that's what we do. We tell stories. And in stories, we learn more about ourselves. We understand ourselves and each other better, right? So it's an understanding. But what does that really mean? And that's it, is that I can look at you and we can be completely different from very different backgrounds, have had very different experiences. And as long as I can see myself in you, or you can see yourself in me, we bridge enormous complexities and enormous problems, and we make great strides. And when we can get there, but it's a lifelong process. It's not something that happens in a day. There, it's baby steps. And I think that Dignity Index is a beautiful thing, because it allows you to sort of identify. And here's the thing on the index, we all do this, right? Especially with people we love, and especially with people that we can be truly vulnerable with, right? We slide back and forth, I'm sure, on that index. We drop down to a three because my husband is really making me crazy right now. I'm up here with a six and singing Kumbaya with my best friend, and then I'm back down to a two, right? And so that's how we move. That's humanity. That's all of humanity.
It is.
And it's a beautiful thing.
And we, you know, when we started our pilot, our demonstration pilot, it only took us a day or two, but we found ourselves, when we tried to explain the scores, we rated political speech. Just, we wanted to get to the validity. We wanted to develop a valid instrument. And so we had a research team actually from the University of Utah that helped us. We would score the speech. We would look at the intercoder reliability and, you know, making sure that we were getting to a valid instrument. But the first couple of times we reported the scores, we would find ourselves saying, this candidate was a four, this candidate was a three. It's like, no. Candidates, people, we're not scoring people. We're not assigning people a score. We're looking at the speech that we use, because we know that words matter. And in one debate, you know, a candidate could have been as low as a two and up to a seven, all over the place, because we are human and we can change and we have the ability to do better. But that's something really important to remember, that on any given day, I could be at any given point. And once you learn the scale, it's kind of fun. I'll have, I had a friend call me or text me the other day and said, does the Dignity Index apply when I'm on the interstate? And I said, it especially applies while you are on the interstate. Absolutely. And it, I mean, because we're getting to what we wanted, which was a common vocabulary. We want to develop this common vocabulary so people immediately say, and again, it's kind of a blessing and a curse, but I immediately know when I'm a four or I'm a three. It's like, oh, I can't believe I thought that again. I can't believe I'm saying that again. But it's a blessing, because then I can say, I caught myself and that's not where I want to be. I want to be a five. I want to be a six.
Well, and I, I the common language is critical to be able to have a common conversation. I would invite every viewer to go to our website once this is over and it's posted.
Because I would go to dignityindex.us. So our unite.us is our nonprofit, but we've taken such a deep dive. This is our lead project right now that we have its own webpage, dignityindex.us or .us. Okay. And we just posted some resource material on here. We're pedaling as fast as we can, trying to respond to say to your listeners, one of the cards that we posted, we call Dignity Starters, because people always say, well, what can I do differently? Or tell me, give me something to do. So Tom, at a training workshop we were at a few months, it was in March, a few months ago, people said, what can I say differently? How can I say this differently? So we came up with Dignity Pickup Lines, which we have renamed Dignity Starters. But when you feel yourself being challenged and someone's saying something that you think is ridiculous and you think that they are ruining the country, what can you say instead? And so some of these lines are brilliant. And these were crowdsourced from people at our workshop. They said, can you tell me more about that? And then listen, then you listen. Or, wow, I think just the opposite. Can you tell me how you came to that view? I like this one. Let's figure out what we disagree on, because it can't be everything. I want to hear what you think. Can you tell me what I'm not getting? Or how do you think we fix this? That's fascinating. I need to hear more. These are dignity starters, or these are things that you can say in response to a line that would normally trigger you, or someone that has a very different opinion than you do. And you'll be amazed at what the conversation, I mean, how disarming, just for someone that is getting ready to go to battle with you, for you to say, can you explain that to me? Or how did you come to that view? And this one, I really like this one. It says, thanks for talking with me. A lot of folks won't talk to people they disagree with. You have opened up this line of communication. You're validating the other person. I mean, if someone would respond to me like that, I would immediately tone down, my passion or my rhetoric. Because, like, I think they want to listen to what I'm saying.
No, that's great. Yeah. I love that. Please, we again will have a podcast companion on this. We'll have the information on the site. And I encourage people to do it at different times when they're going to the Dignity Index, depending on how they're feeling. When you're tired, go there and see where you think you are. When you're hungry, go
after
there.
After you watch the news, after you just watch the news, you probably
go see where you are. I mean, this is all an exercise in self-awareness, right? To really start to understand. I have kept you way too long. It has been a wonderful.
Great conversation. Thank you.
Great conversation. We are thrilled to have you. And for our listeners, as you know, there will be a podcast companion. There will be podcast notes available on the Defining Us website. So please go there to definingus.org, unite.us, dignityindex.us. And thank you, Tammy, so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for spreading the good word.
Yeah.